It's not our first time. It's actually our first time doing it in person.
It is.
Yeah, this is cool.
In studio.
This is really awkward. Yeah. This is really awkward in person.
We can just intimately stare at you instead of just.
I'm so uncomfortable to have other people in the room and talking to you guys.
I'd much rather look at you on a screen than.
This episode of Bourbon Pursuit is made possible through listeners like you, supported through Patreon, and with partnerships brought to you by the following. Sterling Cut Glass is the official whiskey and tasting glass supplier to distilleries across the country and is also the official glassware of Bourbon Pursuit. They are offering free etched samples to whiskey societies nationwide. Simply email spirits@sterlingcutglass.com, include your logo, and mention Bourbon Pursuit. Take a look at their online catalog with Glencairns, Copitas, Rock Glasses, Decanters, and more at bourbonpursuit.com and click on the banner for Sterling Cut Glass. Hey everyone, welcome back to this week's episode of Bourbon Pursuit. And before I get to be a little selfish talking about Patreon and some of the benefits and some of the stuff that's going on, I just need to go through just a few things. First, that remember the Kentucky Derby Museum's Legend Series, those tickets are now on sale. So you're going to have Pam and Andrea of Michter's, you're going to have Craft Night featuring Rabbit Hole, Jephthah Creed, and Peerless Founders, as well as Dixon Deadman of Kentucky Owl. The first one begins in January, and make sure you go buy your tickets at derbymuseum.org/legendseries, where you can see Fred Minnick, one of the members of this team up there, emceeing and sort of leading the discussion. Now, as I had mentioned, we're going to be a little selfish talking about Patreon because there's a lot of stuff that happened this week. First, all our new t-shirts came in, so anybody that had ordered one through Patreon, I'll be shipping those out relatively soon. Second, if you are even remotely following anybody in whiskey on Instagram, it's hard to miss it. The Kentucky Double. I'm sure you've all seen it by now, but if you haven't, go check it out, thekentuckydouble.com. And it's really a work of art where you can combine favorite two things right now, drinking some bourbon and smoking a nice cigar. However, we had posted on Patreon this past week, and I put some pictures out on Instagram as well and Facebook, that we have a Bourbon Pursuit branded Kentucky Double that you can purchase for a special Patreon discount, and that's only going to be a limited time offer. So make sure you go to patreon.com/bourbonpursuit, look for the post so you can get the coupon code to be able to do that. And lastly, just about Patreon in general, I'm excited to actually announce that we have completely sold out of our $50 per month slots that we had available. I mean, I'm blown away. Thank you so much for the support that it takes to build the show and grow on it and everything like that. And we'll evaluate later on if we want to expand that out and maybe add more people in this particular tier. However, until we do that, we're going to make sure that we start getting bottles out of our barrel picks to everybody at this point to make sure everything is about as fair as possible. And lastly, we're going on another barrel pick this week as well. So this week on Tuesday, we had selected out a barrel at New Riff Distilling Company. It's one of those things that you might have seen them around the forums. They've been getting a lot of attention. They're not nationally distributed yet. However, we had the ability to go and get a barrel, and honestly, I'm blown away by it for something that's 4 years old. You know, if you're part of the Patreon community, you can probably get one of these bottles. So make sure you go and you sign up again, patreon.com/bourbonpursuit. Now, today's episode, it's a special one. We have been talking about doing this for a long time, but it just so happened that everybody was in town for Bourbon and Beyond. So we were able to do an in-person roundtable, sort of community gathering with everybody here at my house and being able to just kind of talk and really do it in person, right? It was kind of weird, right? At first, like, we don't have to look at each other through cameras when we're doing this. We're actually all together in one place. So it was a really cool opportunity to be able to do that. We also want to say a special thank you and shout out to everybody at Bourbon and Beyond who came up and said hi to Ryan and I or sat in our sessions. It was really cool to be able to kind of listen and speak and shake hands with some of the listeners of the show. It actually always goes a long way to introduce yourself. So we kind of know like the faces behind the listeners that are out there, right? So it's really cool to be able to see that. Now, this episode, as I'd mentioned, we talk a little bit about Bourbon Beyond. We talk about a little bit of a funny story that happened from the auction. And then we're going to talk about Denny Potter and the master distiller shift that's happening between Heaven Hill and Maker's Mark and Jim Beam and how all those things are sort of playing together. And then we kind of wrap it up with a special surprise that Brian from Sippin' Corn brought us, which was a bottle of 17-year-old Old Taylor. This was something that had originally been distilled at the Old Taylor Distillery at Castle and Key Distillery, and he brought it over as kind of a, I think it was like a present to himself to be able to do this, but we got the opportunity to try it, so it's really cool. Now, I'm going to go ahead, kick off the show, but I want to say thank you again to Fred Minnick for including us with Bourbon and Beyond. Thank you to everybody again that came out. It was an incredible time. It sucks that day two is sort of ruined, but you know, it's just the weather. What else can you do about it, right? So make sure you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. If you're more of a video person, check out YouTube and Facebook. And of course, support the show on Patreon if you can. Just a few bucks goes a long way in helping build this community and help build everything that we're doing as well. And if you want the full show notes with links and everything, go to bourbonpursuit.com and subscribe to our emailing list. With that, enjoy this week's episode, and here's Fred Minnick with Above the Char.
I'm Fred Minnick, and this is Above the Char. As I cinched my Bourbon and Beyond ascot, I looked in the mirror, smiled ear to ear, and thought, this is my Super Bowl. For the past year, I curated Bourbon and Beyond, a festival in Louisville, Kentucky that attracts 50,000 people with musical acts such as Lenny Kravitz, John Mayer, Robert Plant, Sting, and iconic celebrity chefs like Top Chef's Tom Colicchio. In this sea of talent, I was the bourbon guy, whose sole job was to pair bourbon with so much beyond. This cool opportunity got the attention of Forbes, whose headline read, Sting, Lenny Kravitz, Fred Minnick, how a Louisville boy became a bourbon headliner. Bourbon and Beyond is bourbon's opportunity to introduce music fans and foodies to not just bourbon, but the culture, lifestyle, and geekiness of our beloved spirit. I am so passionate about bringing new voices to bourbon, such as Uncle Nearest, Fawn Weaver, and Rabbit Hole's Cave Zamanian. And when I was on stage, I relished in the fact that so much youth filled the seats and was stunned to witness brand loyalties. This especially held true in my seminar, Jack and Jim, What's the Difference?, where Jack Daniels, Jeff Arnett, and Jim Beam, Fred Noe, discussed the differences between Jack Daniels and bourbon. As if it were a political debate, one side was filled with Jack Daniel t-shirts and the other side, Jim Beam, Wild Turkey, Bullet, and many other bourbon brands. It was a fun debate. A lot of fun. Backstage, I was gathering content for a film series you'll learn about later. I tasted bourbon with master chef Aaron Sanchez and music icon David Byrne, who's in person exactly like you'd expect him to be, quirky, and you know what? Eager to learn about bourbon. Like I said, this was my Super Bowl, and at halftime, I was winning by a boatload of points. I felt the crowd's energy when on stage and loved seeing every one of my panels, including the Bourbon Pursuit boys, just crush it. I also landed so many cool interviews in my trailer. It was just awesome. But the second half would not happen. Louisville officials forced canceled the festival due to unsafe grounds that the rain had created. I was defeated, very saddened. Don't get me wrong, I understood the decision. It was raining nonstop, and the grounds were largely underwater. It was a soupy mess. There was no way a second day could work. But that single day was absolutely glorious. Bourbon personalities had never seen such a limelight with around such big names. You could say for a moment, we were all singing in the rain with a bourbon in hand. And that's this week's Bourbon Pursuit's Above the Char. Make sure you subscribe to Bourbon Pursuit on iTunes or wherever podcasts can be listened to. Hit me up on Twitter at Fred Minnick, and if you have an idea for Above the Char. Thanks, and see you next week. Cheers.
Welcome back to the 24th edition of the Bourbon Community Roundtable. However, this one is going to be much different than any other one we've done before because we all just happen to be here in Louisville for a particular concert, which we will talk about. And this is the first time we're doing it live. We're all here in person. Yeah, like
In studio.
Our internet friends
Internet friends unite.
Yeah, right?
Like, they do exist.
And to the dismay of
this
our
is actually
lives.
The first round table I've worn pants for, so
thank you for that.
Yeah, we do appreciate that.
And I'm wearing shorts.
And your broadband's pretty good right now, too.
Yeah,
best
it's ever
been. The best internet I've had.
And the only one without a screaming baby in the background.
So we'll do as we always do, right? Yeah. So Kenny and Ryan here from Bourbon Pursuit leading this on, but we've got the fellas from Breaking Bourbon right next to us too. So actually, this is the first time both of you have been on. You've probably done it once or twice before.
I think we had to fill in for somebody missing.
Yeah.
That one time.
Yeah.
But now we get both angles of it. So go ahead.
Yeah. So I'll go ahead. I'll start. So I'm Nick. This is Jordan. We're two of the three guys behind Breaking Bourbon. And you can check us out online at breakingbourbon.com. Follow us on social media at Breaking Bourbon. Want to say thank you guys for hosting. You know, always fun. Always have a good time. I think that's the one thing about bourbon I really like. You know, because I was asking some people what they hate about bourbon yesterday at the thing we were at the festival. And, you know, it kind of turned into the things we liked about bourbon. So this is really the thing I think I like the most about bourbon is like meeting people that this all kind of came together simply because of our mutual shared interest in bourbon. So glad to be here.
Yep.
Absolutely.
On to me. I'm Blake.
Game updates, right?
Yeah. No, I was trying to post it to the Facebook group. I'm Blake from bourboner.com. Check me out on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I feel like I don't have to give these out when we're all sitting in the same room, but no, happy to be here. So it's fun to actually do one of these in person.
And I'm Brian with Sippin' Corn. Find me on mostly on Twitter, a little bit on Facebook. And November 1st is the release date for Bourbon Justice. It's on a 33% discount right now for pre-order on Amazon.
Super exciting.
Very exciting.
Super exciting.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks, guys. All are. Yeah. Absolutely. So before we kicking off talking about, because we're all here for Canyon for Bourbon Beyond, right? The reason why we're all sitting here today and
it's
we're not
postmortem.
Yeah, it really is.
This is true.
What did we do wrong? but really, it was today, the second day, actually got canceled. It was, it was like a fortunate of unfortunate things, right? Because like if it was going on today, like we would have gone.
We'd be there.
We'd powered through it, right? Because definitely wanted to be there. I feel bad for these two guys over here that had sessions to be able to give today and workshops.
Feel bad for the audience, too. They didn't get
to see.
That's true.
That's true.
That's why we're doing this today. Right. Because
I feel really bad for the festival because they said they're refunding all the tickets, all the vendors.
Which is great to the festival.
Right.
It's great to the organization, for sure.
But people still traveled here.
Yep.
We met people from Australia. From Texas.
This is true.
From all over.
It's a big event.
It was kind of a relief, though, when I woke up this morning. I was like, I was like, oh, thank God.
I don't know if people weren't there. People were, know obviously what happened, but the rain, it got so muddy. We were up to our ankles in mud yesterday. It was hard to move around.
Yeah, so for those that weren't there, this is a huge, huge field in Louisville next to the river, and there was a solid, no joke, 4 inches of mud throughout the entire event by the end of the day. And it was one of those areas where your shoes were about to get sucked off each step you took.
I had to like go back and fish it out.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
I don't think most people were prepared for that because the weather forecast said from like 3 to 6, there was like 30% chance of drizzle.
Up until that morning?
Well, it was not a drizzle.
A little more than a drizzle.
It was like 4 inches of rain. And
it was nonstop.
Yeah. It was like Derby this year. It just never stopped raining.
It was pretty bad. However, I think the best part was how unprepared Blake came because he came and he's got his white vineyard vines white. Polo on. So he's got his white polo on.
And then he's like a t-shirt contest.
And then he's got his leather loafers. And I don't were they toss away? Like are they gone?
It's a TBD on the leather loafers. I washed them off in the shower last night, and we'll see what happens when I get home. I like get room server or room keeping to give me a plastic bags to pack my way in. So, you know, fingers crossed, hopefully they survive. But
Tiffany shoes did not. My wife. I checked those as soon as we got home.
You got to tell everybody the backstory that doesn't know about it.
Tell
them who Tiffany is.
She's not going to listen.
Tell us who Tiffany is too, right? So
Tiffany is my wife. She was coming to meet us at the event. I kind of texted her. I'm like, hey, it's really rainy, muddy. I call her on the phone. I'm like, probably want to wear your hunter boots. She's like, well, I've already left. Well, she shows up and she's like, got these wedge sandals on and like wearing a skirt and no raincoat. And I'm like, oh God,
you're gonna have a bad time.
I'm fucked. But no, she powered through. At first, she was like, oh man, she about fell on the way there, but I think the blueberry brandy cocktails at the Bald and Bond tent helped her embrace it a little more.
Fair.
Before we get into more of the festival, right? I want to talk about Friday night, right? Okay. So Blake, Ryan, and myself. So anybody that was hopefully been paying attention, right? We've been talking about this Art of Bourbon rare auction that was going on at the Speed Art Museum to benefit. That was also part of the Bourbon and Beyond. I guess you can say warm up, pre party, whatever you want to call it, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And so we got one funny story out of it. But anybody that was not paying attention to some of the social media, there were some high dollar bottles that went off. Granted, it's all for charity, right? It's going to the right cause. For anybody that does want to know, that number 10 bottle of Pappy Van Winkle 23 actually sold for $19,500 back to Julian, right? So he ended up buying it back.
And
right?
This is the literal 10th bottle ever bottled of Pappy 23. This isn't just like, you know, the 10th year or 10th edition, the 10th bottle.
And right. He already owns 1 through 9, right? So he had all 10. And
no, actually. No. So
1 through 5 was family. And then 6 through 10 was just
this guy who donated them. I don't think they're revealing the name.
But so Julian didn't donate it.
No,
he bought it back into the family.
He's got to play by the same rules as the rest of us. It's hard to get those old bottles.
I couldn't tell if he pulled the Sazerac credit card or the Van Winkle credit card. I was trying to get a name on that one, but. Just kidding.
Do you want to tell your story about how one time you actually got to hold this bottle?
I'm actually didn't even get to hold it because it never came up here. I'm really bitter about this one because about 4 years ago, the guy who subsequently donated the bottles emailed me through Bourboner and was like, hey, I've got these bottles. You're interested? And we're looking back at pictures. He wanted $4,500 for three of these bottles, and one of them being the 10th. Yeah, so a little over whatever the math is, 70 or my brain's dead. So 1,400 apiece.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Hope you're not his accountant.
Yeah, I use a calculator. We're good. No, so about 1,400 apiece, and I'm thinking, yeah, I'm going to do this, and then all of a sudden it's like, if I spend $4,500 on bourbon, my wife literally will kill me. Like, I can't do this for three bottles, and ended up backing out. And now looking back, that one bottle went for $19,000. So it's kind of like, well, maybe that would have been a decent investment.
Hindsight's 2020. Don't be too hard on yourself.
No, right. But, you know, that was one funny story. But here's another funny story. So I kind of wish, so Fred was going to actually join us today, but he couldn't. He actually had to just leave to go back on site. But I kind of want to get his perspective from his viewpoint angle. So this is sort of how it went down, right? And to kind of put the cart before the horse, Blake, Ryan, and myself actually backed out of the highest bid on one of the auctions. Right?
And by backed out, I pretended like I didn't know these
guys.
Yeah,
they're like, so
quick. I'm like, huh? Who are these?
I was like, that was not me. And
wrong paddle.
All right. They're like, what's your number?
They look at all three of us and say, which number do you want to use? None of them.
We looked at each other. Nobody said a word.
So here's the story, So the story is that, you know, they've got this whole line of auction items, but one of them, it was a bottle of William Lew Weller, a bottle of George T. Stagg, and a barrel of Antique 107. And, you know, we're sitting there looking at each other, and Ryan kind of knew about this ahead of time because they did a similar auction not too long ago where that barrel and everything went for about $30,000. Right. And we already knew, like, well, we're not going to go that high. But we kind of looked at each other and said, like,
what's our max price?
Like, and we, like, that we could, you know, we could bring more people onto this or whatever it is that makes it, you know, basically like maybe just a little bit less than secondary that we could, you know, help people out and, you know, you can get these bottles. But anyway, we were, we kind of, I think we said like what, like 15 was like our max, right? 15 is our max. Like after that, we're out. And so it starts going, right? Like off the bat, it's like 1,000, 2,000. And then Ryan's just holding his paddle up.
He's leaving it up full time.
He doesn't even take it down.
You're in first and second.
Yeah, so they get to about 11,000, 12,000. And then so then they're going around and they're going 13, 13. Anybody want 13? Anybody 13? And then I think Fred finally realizes, he goes, oh shit, these guys are the ones bidding on it.
Yeah. And so by the grace of God.
Yeah,
these morons didn't read the fine print, apparently. Yeah.
Because what he had to come in, he had to clarify. He goes, this is not for the entire barrel. It's the opportunity to purchase the barrel. So you'd actually have to buy the extra barrel, which is another, what, probably 7 to 10,000, yeah, whatever it is.
But it did not say that anywhere in our defense.
I mean, that was never mentioned in any of the
material. It didn't say it before it went off. It didn't say in the printed material. I mean, it was very misleading.
Yes.
Yeah, that's arguably a very material state, right? We have an attorney.
We have this object. We're out. And so, like, but they didn't, like, hear us or, like, didn't want to acknowledge that we said we're out.
They basically said we're out when you were waving your number.
No, I'm like, I'm putting my number under my ass. So I don't. But so then they're, like, trying to make us feel like, come on, God. I mean, this is all for charity, you know? Like, I'm like, this is getting really awkward. My heart is pounding. I'm sweating, like, panic. And they're like, oh, and then so they're doing 11, 11, 11, and they're like, sold. And they're like,
and we were like, no.
Like,
we're like putting our hands across our necks, like, no, retract. Like, we want out of this.
And then, like,
and then people start swarming our table. They're like, so is there a problem? Like, what should we do?
They go, what number do y'all want to use? There's like three of y'all. Which one is that what y'all are trying to decide? And we're like, we're not buying this. Yeah.
So I don't think we talked about it. Well, I'm curious what did it end up going for?
It ended up actually going for, I think, 6.5.
I don't know. I was so thrown off that point.
I know.
So what'd they do? Just start bidding again?
Well, they looked at us. They looked at us and they said, well, you are the ones bidding. Like, where would you like to start it back from? And we're like,
Zero.
Like, we're done. Like, we're out of this thing.
Not
right?
even buying it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, it ended up going for 6.5, which in hindsight,
still not
probably
bad.
ended up being a pretty good deal.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. Only a little bit over what you're getting.
Because you're probably getting about 180 bottles.
Yeah, so it actually probably would have been a pretty good deal to get it at 6.5, but I don't. At that point, we felt this a sense of relief. B, we were like, Fred's gonna talk to us afterwards, and he's gonna be like, "You guys embarrassed me."
We just said, "Okay, we'll pay $12,000." Just kidding, but we will pay six. Can't retract and then bid again.
Yeah,
it
I know.
Just doesn't look good.
Fred's
in general.
Before we walked in, he goes, "Make sure you bid on something."
Well, you did.
Yeah. And then I would think the only person that I think that also got maybe the deal of the night was that. It was the first Heaven Hill 27 year to actually kind of go out there, right? You know, that's something that's going to be a $400 retail bottle. It ended up going for $2,200, I think, is what it was. Mm-hmm. And because nobody knows really where that's going to end up right now. Like, that could be a $1,500 bottle. That could be a $3,000 bottle.
Yep.
So we'll see what the market determines. But I think that person maybe had one of the better takeaways.
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly wasn't others.
Somebody asked about what other bottles. So there was an Albert Blanton's from, I think it was 52.
52, which
Albert
was really cool.
Picks.
Yeah. And then just some other.
That was 10,000, right?
Yeah, it went for 10,000. Yeah. It actually sold to the people that owned Jephthah Creed. They bought that one.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. There was like some Old Forester Presidential.
It was
an Old Forester barrel selection.
Yeah, the barrel actually went for 21,000. I believe that went back to the Old Forester people.
And a bottle of regular Blanton's went for what?
$700 or $800?
$700 or $800.
Just a regular bottle of Blanton's.
Yeah, which is
watch the prices on Blanton's.
There were a few of those where it's like, I guess they're just doing that to
an
Old Weller original from I think that was the 50s as well that went.
Yeah, it went for like 5 or 6, didn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And then,
is it a pint? Or a...
Yeah, but
pint, like I said, I think...
Model?
Yeah.
It was fun. I think for anybody, and you know, the auction, the prices are asinine, but it's all for charity. Like, it's just an opportunity for people to kind of throw some money around, but I'll say from an entertainment perspective, I loved it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The auctioneer was great.
It was great.
Fred was great commenting on each bottle about it. Like, you know,
and it went fast.
Yeah.
Like 37 auctions went in an hour and a half. Like it was
fast. Those can go so slow sometimes.
Oh, it was fast.
And it was online too, wasn't it? People could put in bids from online.
So they started out with high bids, a lot of those things, except for like the Limestone Branch I saw pre-auction was like $100 only.
Yeah.
What did that end up going for? Any memory?
I can't remember.
More than $100.
It was right after the Weller, so it's just went downhill from there.
It was a blur after that.
It was so long ago. But anyway, so let's kind of talk a little bit about Bourbon and Beyond, right? You know, I think the highlight, not the highlight, maybe the low light was all the damn weather and the mud, right?
Like that was the headline. Yeah. Unfortunately, that was the headline.
Yep. But, you know, in regards of, we'll just talk about the bourbon experience, right? Because that's really what we were there for. Music was great for anybody that was just
Lenny
wanting
Kravitz to rocks.
Yeah, I mean,
he was fantastic.
He was great
live.
So music, there's enough to say about that. But the bourbon stuff, the bourbon plus workshops that were going on, I was highly impressed with how well it went down. You know, and kudos to Fred for putting everything together. I think
he did a great
absolutely.
Job.
I think it was very professional. Everything was done very, very well. It catered to multiple types of audiences that were there too, because you had some 101 level stuff and then you had some 201 sort of stuff too. And you got a good mix of the crowd, right? And I think the other cool thing is by the time Ryan went on, because Ryan's session was at 6 p.m., people were a little toasted by then.
Yeah. So my audience was rowdy and a little more live. I loved it. They're like, woo! And I'm like, thank you. It's making it so much easier. And I think, honestly, I had quite a buzz too.
What I was going on.
Yeah. I'm being honest.
Yeah. But he came out and like the crowd's cheering. Yeah. Like you introduced Marianne and everybody's going crazy. Yeah. And then it was almost like everybody had like pockets of fan clubs, right?
Because
when John Foster of Smooth Ambler went, you like see all people in Smooth Ambler in the back like going crazy. So it was fun
and
to
John
see.
John Foster, I mean, that was awesome right there. I mean, he was very animated, very outspoken. I mean, that was really cool.
He's a cool guy. Yeah. He's a cool guy. He's a nice guy.
Yeah, he was direct, very straightforward.
It wasn't really your typical PR answer.
Yeah, there wasn't a public relations person there like
was unfiltered. He cut right through the bullshit. That was great. I think from the experience being in the audience and even not just viewing the actual workshops and things like that, but just, you know, all these people that are these, you know, bourbon stars, bourbon celebrities, people in the industry that you hear about, you read about, you know, you see, you're interacting with, you know, they're just regular people getting a drink with you type of thing, which I thought that was a fantastic aspect of the event as well.
Yep. So for those who didn't attend, right? So there was a stage set up. There's two different stages. One just did pure bourbon talks that, you know, Kenny and Ryan and Blake and Brian was going to do, and stay moderated these talks, which were awesome. There's another one that incorporated celebrity chefs in bourbon. But then throughout the festival, they had these great activations, right? There's the big bar, big bourbon bar, with just tons of cool cocktails, tons of master distillers hanging out. You can just grab drinks with them. Jack Daniels had a cool thing. There's college football games going on in there. But the moral of the story, there was just so much different bourbon and cocktails and so many opportunities.
I couldn't even make it like to like 10%
right.
of it.
Yeah.
You know, because there's so much to
huge.
Offer.
And we talked with a ton of fans. We, you know, talked with a ton of master distillers. It was a really fun time, right? It was just a really, if you get a chance to come down next year to this event, please make sure to go do it, because it is, if you like bourbon, it is just awesome. Weather aside, it was an awesome event.
I think even if you're not necessarily into bourbon, you know, it's something that's got it for everybody, where you could, not to say avoid the bourbon, but you certainly don't have to get it all geeky in bourbon to enjoy it. I think that was probably the majority of the people there were really there just for the entertainment aspect. Oh,
yeah.
And
the bourbon the was so good.
Secondary thing.
I think it's funny, like in Kenny's seminar, which you did an excellent job, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
I appreciate it. But, you know, they give you samples of each. And I think there were some people that sat on the seminar that probably, like, didn't realize what they were drinking. And they're, like, they're taking it. They're like, oh, gosh, this is, like, strong.
It's and a, big, you know, there's a 117 proof Willet.
Like, you got Willet's 107. I mean, you got some great whiskeys here. You're leaving on the table.
Like, oh, I want some's a little smoother. No, dude, enjoy what you have.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the first session. So what happened was is Blake and I were invited to help sit on a session because Jimmy Russell's sister passed away. And so the Russells couldn't make it to it, so they had to do a kind of a stand-in Wild Turkey tribute, right? And just talking about the whiskey in itself.
They dug deep and got Kenny and Blake.
I was going to say, talk about the ultimate disappointment. You show up to see Jimmy and Eddie Russell, and then it's me and Kenny sitting up there in matching shirts.
But, you know, just talking about the whiskey in general, like, it was, they were pouring out, what, 17-year Master's Keep? Is that what they
had? 17-year Master's Keep they had for us.
Yeah, and that's what they were pouring out. Like, it was like, you wouldn't necessarily see that. Like, you'd think they're pouring out like 101 or Rare Breed or something, right? But that's
the great thing though with all these sessions was they were free, right? So once you're in the festival, if you wanted to go attend one of these, you totally could, which was great. There's no upcharge, no nothing. So people were lining up, doing a ton of different talks, tasting a ton of different things, which I thought was great, right? It was, you could really experience a lot for free.
It was a great setup.
It was awesome. Yeah.
Which that part I didn't even realize until I got there of like, oh, you just line up for just whatever you want to do and go it. Because like even like some of the food and cocktail things, I'm like, all right, so what do I need to sign up? Like, no, just go on in. Yeah,
first come, first serve. Like, whoever wants to sit.
Dang, this is pretty sweet.
Yeah. And to that end too, it was first come, first serve though too. So if you wanted to be sitting at tables where there was the Wild Turkey sample, you had to be in the first group of whatever it was.
I think there were 30 seats.
Is that what it was? Yeah. About 30 seats. Everyone else would kind of fill in the back. So you did have to get maybe 20-30 minutes ahead of those to be the ones you really want to see and be on top of. But I don't think that bothered anybody. You know, people were standing in the back. We were in the back, I think, for the majority of them, you know, hanging out with master distillers and people like that.
Yeah,
it was a lot of fun.
I think there's actually potential for growth there. They could double the size of those seats.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Easily fill them, too.
Yeah,
easily.
I can make it surprised probably to see that next year.
It could be as big as the chef one, the MASH stage they had. They had about double the seats, and they were filled, and then you could easily fill the workshop stage, too.
Yeah,
100%. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So any other kind of thoughts on Bourbon and Beyond before we kind of... I mean, Brian's still got his wristband on. I think he still hopes that...
Yeah.
Still
I'm pretending today that I'm still there. So I've got my special wristband on and just wishing I get the call, but I'm not. Yeah.
So Brian missed his session, right? And I was really looking forward to that session.
Yeah, I was going to do a session on barrel finishing, and we were going to have a great panel of master distillers, plus Angry Orchard, because they've got now a product. Oh, that's right.
Well, we can act like we're the master distillers.
So we'll go around.
Let's do it. I call being the Angry Orchard guy. Yeah, okay. His commercials.
So that's definitely the Beyond part of it, and I think that shows how far bourbon has come.
Yeah.
And it's in every area now, and ciders are now aged in bourbon barrels. So
Well, give us a teaser. Give us a question you were going to ask. Give us the hardest question that you were going to ask.
Well, I was going to ask Wes Henderson if he was really selling bourbon, cuz I know he is. He's sensitive to that, because there are some purists who say as soon as you finish a bourbon in a secondary barrel, it's not bourbon anymore, because you can't have any flavoring additives. All you're supposed to have is your first time use charred oak barrel and your yeast and your mash bill and all those things to give the flavor. You can't flavor it with anything else. And there's a lot of purists who say putting staves in it like Maker's 46 or putting it in a brand new barrel, whether it's port like Angel's Envy does a lot or sherry or whatever else, means it's not bourbon anymore. Now, TTB lets you say bourbon finished in.
Yep.
So TTB isn't as much of a stickler as a lot of purists are. But he's a little touchy on that subject. So I wanted to see.
A lot of these guys are going straight for the. All right, let's make this
going right
fun.
For the jugular.
Wow.
All right. First question of the day. Welcome, everyone. Go.
Wes, you don't sell bourbon.
Yeah. Now, is it fair to have you answer that your own question and say, what do you think about how it's labeled, what the TTB allows?
Mm. What, to have Wes answer that?
No, I mean, no.
Sure. Oh, sure. Yeah. Like, I think that's fine. As long as it's transparent. I mean, so as long as you say bourbon finished in, you've got to, as long as you disclose that, as long as you don't count the finishing time in your age statement, if you have an age statement, then you're transparent. You're telling consumers exactly what it is that you're selling.
And I think I'd rather know that, because I think if it's a bourbon finished in versus a whiskey, just whiskey, could be anything, malt whiskey, I don't know. I want to know that, because I may have at least some idea of what the flavor profile might lean towards, as opposed to kind of just a labeled whiskey.
Right.
Really
just
no
whiskey.
Idea.
You're
have
just going
to
call
try
it whiskey,
it
so it's more transparent to be able to say that you've started with bourbon and then you've finished it in something else. So it's. I know Scotch has gone through that issue too about what they can't put on their bottles anymore, and it's actually less transparent on some of those Scotch laws. because of what they can't say. So I like to be able to say it's bourbon finished in whatever kind of barrel mm-hmm. it is.
Yeah.
You can't really share any more information.
Yeah, there's nothing. Yeah, that's what it is. Say.
What else do you want to know?
Exactly what's in the bottle, and yeah. that's yeah. what I'd like to see.
Yeah.
Well, by the way, I think Wes probably would have been fine. He probably does yeah. want it at the gun. And sure, it's not the first time he's gotten right. that one, so I'm sure he'd be doing great.
He'd be fine, yeah.
Blake, what was your session going to be on today?
So mine was about master distillers, so it was...
It was actually the opposite of that. We don't need no master distillers,
yeah,
right?
Well, that's... yeah, I was basically saying what it was. We don't need no stinking master distillers was the name of it. Talked about the master distiller's role, and you know, it's I've talked to a bunch of master distillers in preparation for this, and usually the answer I get is, you know, what is your role? And it's one day I could be meeting with the investors, the corporate guys. The next day it could be meeting with marketing to plan out new products, and then the third day I could be scrubbing dirt off of machinery in the corner. So
yeah.
it's very broad. It's a little bit of everything. You know, there's not one specific task essentially, but it's kind of like it's bringing the entire production process together. So it's would have been really cool. Would have liked to hear from Jim Rutledge a lot. He was on the panel, and then Kava from Rabbit Hole Distilling, yep. and so really
they're
like
big on that. That's what they kind of preach, is that we don't need a master distiller, right? Mm-hmm. Rabbit Hole,
yeah.
Kinda, it's more of a team effort than yeah, just one person.
Mm-hmm. Just respect right. the process.
And I would agree that it is. It is a team effort at the end of the day. I think you do kind of need that head to kind of lead the yep. team as well. I think it plays a big role.
But I think any more master distiller is probably like more of a figurehead, like something that somebody can connect the brand to more than just like, you know, an operations manager, I guess.
Yeah, and that's where it's interesting. You know, in the U.S., we focus more on the master distiller. We're in Canada and Scotland, especially, they focus more on like the master blender, master taster, and the master distiller is not, you know, it's an important role, but it's not how we kind of lift them up, and that's who we send out to tastings mm-hmm. and all that.
I mean, you're starting to kind of see that though when you think about like barrel bourbon, right? Mm-hmm. And think of Trep, you know, being the master blender versus an actual distiller, and you're starting to see more and more of that come mm-hmm. around versus having, you know, that could be the figurehead if you want, right?
Yeah.
And kind of make it into the American market.
Well, it's nice to have Rutledge, to have heard him, because he fulfilled both roles.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, he is a genius at blending with their 10 recipes, but he knew exactly how that his still was fine-tuned, and he was a genius on both ends.
Yep. And so that was going to be one of the questions, actually, was whenever he was there, was he essentially both roles and just kind of like the master man at Four Roses or, you know, even though as master distiller, he really did. I mean, I think he had heavy influence. Do they have a master blender at Four Roses?
I mean, I know Brent still takes part in the small sure batch does. Releases and everything that. So,
yeah. So it's, yeah, it's now it's him. And it was probably he's got a panel.
It was, I'm sure when Rutledge was leaving, they're like, okay, we need to put together a job description of what the next person we need to do. So yeah, he probably
here's
just had to
the
assume
list.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I did ask Brent that how it transitioned. He's like, basically I do everything I used to do, and just they added some more tasks to it.
And no pay raise.
He told us a story about one of the small batches. I think it might have been Four Roses Limited Edition 2014. That they were really back and forth on. Don't quote me on the exact year, because it may have been a different year. But he kept coming back to Jim with recipes, and Jim kind of was like, "No, it's not really there yet." So I guess there was a little bit of a struggle at that point with kind of the agreement on which one it was going to be. But if I remember correctly, it was, you know, Jim really had final say. So it's like ultimately he's got to be happy with it.
Right.
You know. So I in talking with Brent too about coming up with like Elliott's Select. You know, his first, you know, here you're a master distiller and you're going to have to put out a bourbon with your image on it. You know, that's the first thing people are going to recognize you that probably forever.
You got to put your face on a bottle. That's
put
weird,
your face
right?
on a bottle. Right. So I remember him talking about how nervous he was about it, that, you know, he was between a few different, you know, runs of barrels and what to go this way or that way. So that pressure, you know, ultimately has got to fall on somebody. Somebody ultimately is going to make that decision. So I think that master distiller, you know, they still lead, they still make the decision, you know, regardless of if they're pulling knobs or whatever they're doing, you know, on the day to day, ultimately they are kind of leading that ship. so to speak. So I think that you see that role whether they're idolized and brought to celebrity and marketing or not.
Marion Barnes actually talked about that in I guess it was Ryan's session yesterday, saying like how much pressure there was about putting together all these releases. And at the end of the day, you know, it does fall on their shoulders a little bit. So maybe I would take a team effort.
They're the ones signing off, right? Yeah, they're the ones signing off.
Wasn't my fault, it was the team's.
Yeah, there's no way to shift the blame to anybody other than yourself, right? So
that's like Rick Pitino, who never takes the blame.
Shots fired.
Yeah, really taking one of the gut there for some people. It's all right, but that's actually a pretty good segue into our next subject, talking about master distillers. But before we do that, I want to say first off, shout out to Jane and Larry Rice, Jane Bowie of Maker's Mark, Larry Rice of Silver Dollar, as well as Drew from Willett. Thank you again for joining in my session where we talked about just rare whiskey, which was vintage whiskey in single barrels. And then, you know, Ryan had his audacity of source whiskey topic. So hopefully we will get to submit new topics again for next year and be able to bring some more more fun discussions.
It was really a lot of fun because we sit around and talk about, you know, these, and we have interesting questions amongst us. But usually when we interview master distillers in a traditional setting, you got a PR person, and like there's only so much you can talk about. But here we were kind of like given free rein to do whatever. And it was funny, like in my session, like how each brand would like defend themselves and like try to like stand above the other people. It was pretty cool.
They try to like skirt their way, like this is what we do differently.
Yeah, right.
There's definitely
this is why we're better.
Yeah, for sure.
It was nice a dynamic a little bit of
for right. sure.
And then you had, like you said, their crowd was back there screaming hoo hollers.
They had their fans.
Cool. Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Another quick shout out before we move on. I just saw G to the M. So he's from Belgium watching live for the first time. So welcome to all of our international viewers. You can catch us at an earlier time.
International viewing.
Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, it's all two of you. 2:15 Eastern on a Sunday, right?
All right. What else are you going to do?
It's a good deal. So this was kind of, like I said, we talked about master distillers, but this kind of leads into a lot of the big news from last week. Like the biggest news from last week, there's almost like two. I don't know if you know, Sazerac came out and said, here's the BTAC list. And then Maker's Mark is like, here, hold my bourbon, watch this. And so, you know, of course, a lot of the news from BTAC was released, or BTAC. We've had those conversations before.
Yeah.
We can maybe get to that here in a little bit. But really, the topic of conversation was talking about the master distiller shift that's starting to happen. So Denny Potter, who had been the master distiller at Heaven Hill for almost, I think he's 10 years, maybe just a little bit longer than that. Not he was just the master distiller, he was also the director of operations. He had actually worked prior, Maker's Mark prior to that, but he announced, or I think Maker's actually kind of announced for him last week, that he is going to be taking Greg Davis's role as the master distiller at Maker's Mark. Greg Davis is being moved over to somewhere to look at operations at...
It's one of the Beam distilleries,
one of the Beam distilleries, right?
I guess it's Claremont?
Might be...
Well, they
we probably should have researched this before.
Yeah. I want to say Boston.
Somebody watch it, too. The Booker No Plan in Boston and or Claremont. No, and then Frankfurt is
Boston. Which is Boston.
I think Boston. Right. So maybe it is Boston.
Yeah.
Okay.
Boston,
anyway.
Massachusetts.
Yeah. Right. Austin, Massachusetts.
So anyway, everybody's getting promoted around here, right? That's kind of seems what be happening. So I kind of want to push, I have a little bit of an inside view into this and kind of know some of the reasons why he went over. But, you know, another reason why I kind of look at this too is that he might have been pigeonholed over at Heaven Hill, right? Like there's not, it's a family company.
Yeah.
He probably hit the highest in the echelon he could probably get, right? So he probably made a pretty good move by being able to go to a company that's global. I know a lot of people were looking at it and be like, why would somebody make a lateral move? And maybe in some people's minds, they're like, that might even be like maybe just a step down to go from director of operations just to something that's master distiller. Mm-hmm. However, I don't necessarily see it like that because we were talking about earlier, right? They're public figures, they're faces. And one thing Denny has always done very well is he can talk, right? And he knows his shit, right? So he's very good at both those things. But I kind of want to get your all's take on, you know, moving over. Was it a good move? Is anybody going to sit here and say like he probably should have stayed? Like what are your all's thoughts?
This episode of Bourbon Pursuit is made possible through listeners like you, supported through Patreon and with partnerships brought to you by the following. Sterling Cut Glass is the official whiskey and tasting glass supplier to distilleries across the country and is also the official glassware of Bourbon Pursuit. Sterling has contracted with the finest European crystal factories to bring the best quality glassware into their Kentucky warehouse and production facility. If you've been following us on social media, you'll see how their deep etch glassware is truly the best in the industry. I know because I searched up and down the internet to find out who was the best. Come to find out, Sterling Cut Glass supplies almost all the distilleries on the Bourbon Trail, and they're also the official glassware of the PGA Tournament and the Kentucky Derby. Make your logo shine on Capita nosing glasses, Glencairns, Neat Tasters, Rocks, Tumblers, and more. They're offering free etched samples to whiskey societies nationwide. Simply email spirits@sterlingcutglass.com, include your logo, and mention Bourbon Pursuit. Take a look at their online catalog by going to bourbonpursuit.com and clicking on the banner for Sterling Cut Glass.
But I kind of want to get your all's take on, you know, moving over. Was it a good move? Is anybody going to sit here and say, like, he probably should have stayed? Like, what are your all's thoughts?
Here's my thought, and this is purely speculation. And, like, I don't know. I thought about this because I thought the same thing. Yes, it's a, you know, a bigger company, bigger stage. But I think the way Heaven Hill has just been operating the past couple of years, I think maybe they might be getting ready to package to sell it soon. I don't know. Purely speculation. And maybe that had something to do with it. He kind of saw that on the horizon, but I don't know.
Because he heard it here first.
He didn't.
Wow. I'm just purely speculation here first.
Pure speculation.
Yeah. I mean, my wife works there. I don't see any stock options that come in, right? There's no ownership except from the family, right? So yeah. Who knows? They could be looking for cash
out. I mean, it's no bigger time than now for, you know, their brand and bourbon right now. So, I mean, who knows?
We really haven't seen another massive acquisition like that in a long time. I mean, who would have been the last makers? The last
Beam. One? Beam when they got.
But they were they were been private for a while, or I guess the Suntory would have
that's
been.
That's what I'm talking about. Yep. Right. Yeah, Team Suntory.
That was yeah, no, that's true. I didn't think about that. But ultimately, I mean, I think time will tell. But Heaven Hill, they're kind of a funny one. I feel like they're doing a lot recently, but in a lot of ways, they still seem a little bit behind the eight ball on like things like social media. Like I think they got a Twitter account two months ago or something.
That's true.
And that's true. So I don't know. Who knows what actually happens behind there? Heaven Hill still produces a ton of great bourbon. But I mean, we've all kind of dealt with them on like media side and everything. And you know, I feel like for the first 3 years of Bourboner, I could never get a hold of anyone over there.
Yeah, that's true.
And then all of a sudden you get one person, and you know, I understand that for the smaller companies, but for the second largest producer of bourbon, or maybe that's
still second. Yeah. Yeah. Beam. They have the second most
largest producer of bourbon. You kind of would think they'd have some of that other stuff set up. So, I mean, it's a big win for Maker's Mark. You know, Denny, he really knows his stuff. If you've ever listened to the Bourbon Pursuit podcast where he talks about everything, but no, so I think it'll be good. It'll be interesting to see who fills his role at Heaven Hill now. So we can speculate on that as well. Yeah. I put my resume in, haven't heard back yet.
Yeah. So, still pending.
Yeah. Still pending. It's
I will say, and I don't know if this is just a personal feeling for what I feel like I'm subjected to in terms of marketing and that kind of thing from the big Kentucky distillers. But I feel like both Maker's Mark and Heaven Hill are two that I don't really feel like the master distiller is put forward as a face as much as, say, I mean, the big one is, of course, Wild Turkey with the Russells.
Right.
Yep. You know, labels, name, well, very
Maker's
much
Mark,
in
they're
that.
They're just like a plug and play. Like, we've been doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Consistency. Yep. Like,
very,
no matter
very
who it is,
well,
it's going to be the
clean
marketing.
And they've had distillers come and go that
they
people
have.
They don't
do.
Really
they were
realize.
Like, oh, wait, I didn't even realize that that was a distiller there not that long ago, you know, that person. So that's interesting that maybe there's going to be a shift at that in this point. Maybe we'll see more of a, hey, we're highlighting, you know, Denny instead of just, you know, here's bottles doing fancy things on social media. We might see something change a little bit there.
Now, what's everyone's thoughts about Maker's being the best known wheated bourbon, and Heaven Hill having challenges with their wheated bourbons?
That's an interesting take. Hmm. I mean, I will say that one of the best weeded whiskeys that I had was Parker's a few years ago.
Weeded,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. Weeded whiskey.
That was a weeded whiskey.
13-year mm-hmm. weeded whiskey.
And that, you are fantastic. Right. When it comes to a bourbon, they really don't shine, right? Because you've got Bernheim, which is still a weeded whiskey. It's not a, it's not a bourbon, right?
Then you've got Larceny.
Yes.
And you've got what, other than the decanter series, you've got Old Fitzgerald, which is, you know, what is it, $12? I mean, it's bottom shelf whiskey now.
I think people like Larceny, though.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
people Larceny. Are often saying, yes, Larceny is something you Larceny should try. It's a good alternative. It's under $30, usually.
They've got a lot of marketing budget behind it, too.
They do.
It does hit a very wide audience. And plus the, you know, the bottle design and everything, when they launched that, what, just a few years ago, right? That it was that was sort of their way that they're trying to tackle a younger market, too.
Yep.
Right? And I think move away from Old Fitzgerald.
That was the idea.
For sure.
But Maker's is so iconic, though.
Right.
You know, it's hard to, everybody, when you think of bourbon, you know, who doesn't, Maker's Mark. You know, even people that don't know bourbon,
and it has
know Maker's Mark.
Yeah, strong international presence, too, right? Which is what you don't have with Heaven Hill products.
Because tell people from out, I'll be like, they'll ask me about bourbon, like, if you can find, like, Evan Williams, something, they're like, what is that?
Yep.
And I'm like, you haven't heard of that? And they're like, Maker's, you know, they totally
that's
know.
It.
Maker's in, like, Knob Creek, you know, that's those big brands.
They can find it. You can tell anyone in the world.
Maker's was smart to trademark that drip. That's all I can say is that very smart to do that.
Do you mention that in Bourbon Justice, by the way?
It might be in there.
Oh,
little teaser.
You'll find out on November 1st.
That or more. It was funny at that auction, Julian, you know, it had a wax top, and he was like, yeah, I dipped this wax, but I made sure there was no drip.
Good.
So the other thing that I like about Denny going over to Maker's is I think that next time we have him on the podcast, he can actually be a little bit more of himself. So anybody that's ever actually talked to Denny or knows Denny, he is going to fit very well in with the No family because he cusses a lot, right? And every single time that we've ever interviewed over there, like, there's always a PR person in the room. So it's kind of like he had this somebody over his shoulder, right? Like, making sure he said the same, which is fair.
It's the refined version.
Which is fair, right? Yep. It's understandable. However, I think, you know, going over to this side of the house where you know how the No's act, I don't think that
Bill Samuels is.
He doesn't have to really hold back.
Some legendary stories himself.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
That kind of stuff.
Yep.
So he's not really have to hold back, right? But yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. I am certain that we're going to find out news here in the next week or two of what's going to happen to Heaven Hill because I'm sure that
they need somebody.
Can't leave that hole open long.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is that, you know, we've had the opportunity to go and visit Bernheim, and they've got a lot of we've talked about it before, right? Like, it's more or less a face of the brand. The amount
there's
of time that they're actually
operations that are they got they're doing just fine.
Distiller. There's somebody else doing 95% of the work already, right?
Yeah.
So it's more or less the face of the brand, the marketing engine behind it. Maybe something that is a talking head when you go and you got to go across the country and push your whiskey, right? So they'll find somebody, but I think we could speculate all day and figure out what it is. Who just knows what is going to fit that Heaven Hill mold?
Right.
I think what's surprising to me though too is it shows, you know, the passion Denny has for just making bourbon for the masses, right, and for the mass level. Because he could have easily went independent, right? He could have become a consultant, started up a ton of different brands, and just went for it for a money play.
The next day pick roll.
He could
be,
exactly. And he didn't. He went, you know, back to an iconic brand. He's going to build that and continue to build it. And I think that says a lot about his character too, and like where he wants bourbon to go and what he's really into. So it'll be interesting.
Maybe you get more vacation days out of it.
Well, you know, that might be the case too.
Yeah.
401k. Yeah. I mean, he evaluated all
the five more days.
What's the benefits look like?
and what's interesting, I mean, to piggyback on what I mentioned earlier, you know, if you don't have that person as your icon, that's something that if they leave and people don't notice, it's much less of a hit versus, I mean, obviously we all remember when Jim Rutledge, you know, retired.
Right. When you put all your chips
from Four Roses
with one guy,
and everybody kind of like, it was this, okay, did they do something wrong? Was there wrongdoing? Why is there not a celebration bottle with his name on it? You know, all the kind of speculation that went on out there. You know, I think Four Roses really went on, I mean, defense and then offense. Okay, Brent Elliott, let's get him out there. Let's make this play. Let's get a bottle with his image on it. You know, so that's, you're kind of vulnerable in that case. If the master distiller isn't, you know, part owner, really have some control there, you're going to have that risk.
Right.
Which even is the more interesting part is like Four Roses more than probably Heaven Hill, that when you think about it, like, you're not going to touch a drop that Brent has had anything to do with within this role for at least a little bit, right? Like, you're still, this is all sort of the Rutledge era that everybody's still consuming, right? So he's still got a little bit of a, I mean, let's
aside
be
from blending,
let's be honest, everything's gonna be fine. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's it's right. just like something to just.
But you know, if you want to start stocking up on the Rutledge whiskey, you might.
Know. But the thing is, Brent's
been
he's
there
just
for
doing
a, while.
A recipe that's been
that's
there
true.
For
yeah,
years.
Yeah, yeah.
He's just Brent's. Well, he's been there a long time.
I was just saying in that particular role.
In that role, you're right. But he was always on the tasting panels for the limited editions, small batches. So he'd been. Working with Jim on those things.
He's not a newcomer.
Yeah, right.
And quality control.
But
right?
distilling to me is the control. Easy part. I mean, it's an exact science. It's like a, you know, a formula that you just do. The blending and putting it all together, that's where
that's
I think the
art.
True magic
right.
That's
art
an
is.
Art.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about maybe this blend we have on the table here, because I think this is something that it's a treat. And I am going to let Brian, A, do the honors of talking about it.
Okay.
And then if he feels fortunate enough that he actually wants to open this after this conversation, then we will.
Yeah, well, no pressure.
I think we'll definitely be open it. But so what was it, about 2 months ago or so on one of these episodes, we were talking about the Sazerac versus Castle and Key case. And we had Castle and Key was sued by Sazerac because Castle and Key owns what's historically known as the Old Taylor Distillery in Millville, Kentucky. And Marianne was able to mention that yesterday at Ryan's workshop because Castle and Key won the lawsuit. Castle and Key is now allowed to keep up the sign that says Old Taylor Distillery Company above the door. They're able to talk about the decades of history that Colonel Taylor had at that property. This is the property where he got the Bottled and Bond Act passed. This is the property where he created the Old Taylor brand that's famous. He had spent some earlier time at the OFC, which is the property now where Buffalo Trace is. And Buffalo Trace, Sazerac, bought the brand name from Jim Beam. So they own the Old Taylor brand. They, of course, have the much more popular Colonel E.H. Taylor small batch and single barrel. And they didn't want, they didn't like Old Taylor also being in Millville, I think is what it boils down to. So what I said a few weeks ago or a few months ago is that if the case wasn't appealed, by now, by the time everyone was in for bourbon and beyond, if we it's got a little bit of glare on there, but if you can see the tax strip, this is a distilled in the fall of 1916, wow. Old Taylor, and then bottled in 1933. So this would have been, people know more or less when Prohibition started, but what's not as well known is that distillation stopped before Prohibition came along because of the war, and distilleries were being converted into making alcohol for the war effort, not for drinking, but for use in the war effort. For I don't know exactly what it was used for, but it's really hardcore.
Some kind of fuel,
alcohol.
Was the concept.
Right. So distillation stopped before Prohibition. So this is going to be one of the last distillation runs by Colonel Taylor at the Old Taylor Distillery. And I was fortunate enough to get this bottle. It came in a box. Since it was sold, you could only have medicinal spirits. This is the maximum size you could be sold in. This is, you see at the bottom, it's the American Medicinal Spirits Company. They were a company that started as from the Wathen family, and they bought up a lot of stored aged whiskey, and they were able to sell it as medicinal whiskey throughout Prohibition. So I've got the box. It's a full pint. It's 100 proof, bottled and bond, because of course that's what Colonel Taylor fought for, and I thought we'd be able to enjoy this at the round table.
Well, wow. That's great.
Hey, that's a treat. I'll let you do the honors, right. And
start. I'll turn the mic off, and you guys.
We'll talk about it here for a second.
When I woke up this morning, I didn't think I was gonna be drinking again.
But you know,
I'm glad I am.
Funny how that changes.
Yeah, we were all gonna leave today, but then this came up. So.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Blake was actually at the airport.
This is a true story. This is a very true story.
He was actually at the airport. He was trying to bail out on us early, and then Brian sends a message. He was like, "Hey, I'm gonna bring this," and he's like, "Well, I'm on standby. I guess I'll come by."
So. my standby got mysteriously canceled.
Yeah, and, right. But so here's,
the streak continues.
So I think here's the other thing why this is a big treat, right? So yesterday, for anybody that was there at my rare whiskey talk, Did anybody else catch that when I had asked them? We were talking about vintage and dusty whiskeys,
yep. mm-hmm.
and it came up twice when I asked both Larry Rice. I think Drew as well.
Drew as he well. Said a 1950 version of Old Taylor.
It was a 1940 or 1950, something like that. But Larry said his favorite was, it was like 1910 or 1908 or 1916, whatever it was, yeah. right? So I think this is you know, pretty much a treat for all of us to be able to do this, because I don't think it would have happened any other time unless they're going to go and pay, you know, for...
Astronomical amounts.
At Jack Rose or something yep. like that.
What's
right?
made it harder to open
what's,
yeah.
what's amazing about this bottle is the fill level is fantastic too for, you know, a bottle that's been out.
Yeah, so if you're looking for a true dusty, a pre-prohibition or prohibition era bottle, what the guys mentioned about the fill levels, usually you'd be up higher than the shoulders, and this one is right about at the shoulders. If it's lower than this, chances are it's going to be oxidized and is going to have a sort of wet cardboard taste to it, meaning that the bourbon evaporated out, and that's going to be replaced with something, and that's going to be oxygen, and that's going to change your bourbon over time. You also don't know how a lot of these bottles have been stored. If they've been stored in an attic where it's hot, that's going to change it. If they're stored in the sunlight, that's going to change it. So you're taking a lot of risks when you're buying an old bottle. And the oldest one that I've had before this one was at a KDA event for a bourbon affair where the Samuels family had found a bottle of T.W. Samuels, the old family brand.
Mm-hmm.
And they made a big to-do about it. The whole thing was at one of their houses, and they had it all set up. They had someone with practically white gloves on opening the bottle and pouring it for everybody. And it was awful. It was one of the worst things that we'd ever
done. Jane was talking about that.
Did they admit to that, too?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, everybody. Yeah. Everybody,
she's like, it tastes like shit.
Yeah. As soon as everybody tastes, you start looking around the room, and everybody's like, that's really bad. Yeah. And
so there was a reason and a methodology behind the idea that Bill Samuels Sr. actually, like, or his dad or whatever, actually tore up the family
right.
recipe.
He burned it, they say.
And,
that's part
and
of the
made
legend.
A new one.
Well, it's that, and I think it turned. I mean, it probably wasn't that bad in whatever, I forget how old it was. It probably wasn't that bad.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an example of one that over 100 years had turned. It oxidized, and it had that wet cardboard taste.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
was awful. It was probably the worst whiskey I've ever had of any age, of any time frame.
And the oxidation too. I mean, you know, if you look at the amount of air in there, you know, you bottles have air in them. If they're sealed, well, there's only so much oxygen.
Right.
You know, it's only going to interact so much.
Right.
Depending to how much you might move the bottle around, that kind of a thing. But if it's got that free flow of air, you're constantly replacing it with the new oxygen,
right.
which is going to which
kill
can
your
cause
burn.
That basically. So your reliance on your cork, of course, is very very strong. You've heard those stories of people who just the cork apparently just shriveled up and
right.
dried out,
cork.
And yep. Those because you don't store bourbon on its side either, like
that's,
wine.
That's a great point.
But just came right out.
There it goes.
The cork broke.
So it was.
I put my finger on the.
Oh jeez.
Oh gosh. All right. So we need to go get a Band-Aid.
But we'll work on getting the cork out.
I'll get a cork and some.
But a good sign on the cork breaking.
Just the very tip
is,
of the top.
Is it's just the tip that is that is broken off. And by being stuck in there, I think that should mean that we got a good seal.
I think that's a good seal.
So I think that's a good sign, rather than the cork
because there's definitely
falling
been,
apart and falling into the bottle.
If you think of not even super old, but the turkey bottles of the late 70s, early 80s, which are notorious for the cork breaking, those corks break.
Oh yeah, and the old Crows are like that too.
Right? Yeah,
the Chessman's.
Oh, nice there.
There's a knife.
Yeah, I mean, because that was a little bit of glue that was connecting the cork with.
Yeah, I think you're gonna be okay, Brian. I like Joshua Smith's idea. So drill a hole through the cork and throw a straw in it. So he would, but with straws being outlawed, it's just we probably shouldn't do that.
Yeah, you're not.
For the environment, we're not throwing straws out.
We'll just chug it straight from the bottle instead, Joshua.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. That's why we brought the tweezers.
All right, good. That's loose, so it's a fragile cork.
So he said it's a fragile cork, so...
It didn't fall in, though. It looks like it's still in the neck.
Yeah, that's good.
But broken in a couple pieces.
Well, good thing is...
Okay, you got the tweezers.
This is
how good were you at the game of Operation?
I know, yeah. I was about to say that.
In a glass or something.
It's pretty firm in there.
Yeah, it's so the cork is not pushed down into the liquid yet, but it's pretty firm there, and there's not enough room to get the tweezers
on
the other side.
My suggestion would probably be push it through and filter it out pretty quick.
Yeah,
you got to filter.
You got to do a decanter. That I can put it in.
Yeah, I got glasses. Got let me get it for you.
All right, let's decant.
This is riveting. But back to the question, Blake, what's the oldest bottle?
The oldest, I think it was 1912, but it was 1918, 1912.
Okay.
Had very heavy notes of mothball and dustiness. Some of them, I've had some that are from like the 30s and 40s that are really good, but I feel like anything that I've had pre-prohibition, and I haven't had a ton of it, just probably two or three times, it's always been that really dusty taste.
So we poured it in the cleaned out larceny bottle. You see it's got great color.
We were watching
pretty closely, and there was no loose cork that went into it. So we've just got the cork in the bottle of the old
guys.
Which is a good sign, because it tells you that cork stayed pretty well together there in the neck.
Yep.
Now here's the moment of truth, right? Let's
cross your fingers here.
I'm nervous.
Yeah.
So I'll wrap it up real quick while Brian pours it out. I think the oldest bottle I had was a 1940s bonded bottle. It was good, but I can't imagine it's going to be anywhere close as good as what we're about to sip on. What about you, Nick?
You know, I don't have too much experience with older vintage bottles. I live in Syracuse, New York. Something we really don't see, I think, up there too often. I want to say I've had some old tailors that have been, 60s, 70s. I believe it was an Old Crow.
Oh, man. Oh, we had a 72 or 73 Old Crow.
I think it was 1973. That was very good. That definitely resonated with me, how good that was.
Well, if the nose is indicative.
Yeah, so just Ryan, thank you so much for doing
initially,
this.
You don't get that dustiness, that mothbally oldness.
Yeah.
That is a...
You don't get any funk on that.
That's pure cherries and caramel and brown sugar.
You're right. The brown sugar especially is...
It's got a great color to it, too.
Yeah.
It's
old 17 years, you know.
17 years and stored in Millville. It's a great brown color.
I just realized.
I keep smelling this.
Well, I actually went in and sniffed the microphone.
I was like, which one do I have in my hand?
That's really nice.
That knows it well.
This one survived.
This one held together.
Wow. I mean, that is
delicious.
There's still some finish. I took a sip 20 seconds ago. And
this
still,
is a nice long finish.
Still there, but it's not a robust.
You can taste the bonded, the proof, the 100 proof.
I didn't know that was a thing. I could taste the bondedness.
I could taste the bondedness.
Hey.
Taste the bond.
Oh, my God. Give me that our new T-shirt.
Yep.
I can taste the bondedness.
These things just come. I don't know.
They flow out. I don't know what it is.
The finish is still going, but it's a flavor finish, not a heat robust kind of... Some of those finishes, like an overproof Booker's 25th or something, I think the finish is so good because of the strength and how robust the whiskey is, and
I mean,
it's
that's
more of a
just,
burn. This is a flavor finish.
Yeah, that is.
It's flavor throughout the entire sip. Great nose, great palate, phenomenal finish.
Because there's a little bit of the oak, a little bit of the mineraliness on the finish, but it's still very has a
you
good
like
sweetness
raisins,
and
fruit.
Yep.
Yeah, right. It's
like,
a lot of dried
see,
fruit.
Yeah. Ryan's calling out dried fruit right now. Yep. We have
bondness.
The thing has evolved.
Wow, this is
it's like
else.
A really nice raisin brand.
Man, the best larceny I think I've ever had.
Right.
We just proved that larceny is better than Makers.
Yeah.
Evan Hill has got it right.
They did something right.
No, I'd say it's a good daily sipper, though. So we'll be over tomorrow.
ISO.
Yeah. Time to cancel your next flight, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're kind of wrap this up here. So I'm going to just kind of get in the middle and say cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you very much.
This was an exciting opportunity that, A, we all got to come together and do this. B, that Brian was able to bring this and share it with us, because I think this is a true once in a lifetime kind of opportunity.
And 100%.
That is 100%. A once in a lifetime.
And I couldn't highly recommend people either come to an event like this or like Bourbon Fest or just something.
Talk about Kenny's basement.
Well,
you definitely come to Kenny's basement.
I always send every time somebody I'm like, let's go raid Kenny's bar. But just couldn't recommend more to come to Kentucky or just any bourbon event and hang out with, mm-hmm. you know, the community. Like, I mean, we joke, we're internet friends. Our wives think we're all crazy. But it's just great to, you know, meet these people. And then, like, we met a lot of our listeners at the show, and, like, we're so appreciative. And, like, it was so cool. Like, you know, they're like, "You're Ryan." I'm like, "What?
What do I do?
Yeah. Where's my wife? She's got to hear
you on the, I saw you on the internet."
But it's just, you know, we all have this common thing of bourbon, but we meet so many great people, and it's such a blessing, like, to be able to experience that.
Yeah, it's a great way to put it.
And it's really cool. So I couldn't highly recommend coming to something like this and get involved with it.
Maybe there'll be a round table experience coming up at another bourbon event soon. We'll see. I don't want to tease that out just yet.
Take the show on the road.
That's what we were talking yesterday.
We got plenty of 90s rap music.
Blake was saying yesterday, he was like, "We should dream big. What if we just had, like, our own tent for Bourbon Beyond next year?" Right?
Yeah, I was like,
"Why not?
We'd have to charge extra."
Old Taylor,
I'm gonna need, Taylor on I need tech. Cash only and small bills, please.
But, you know, we typically go around and everybody says their goodbyes on, you know, where you can find everybody. But everybody knows Breaking Bourbon, bourbon.com, Sipping Corn. And make sure you give one more plug for your book when they can find it.
November 1st, Bourbon Justice, and it's on pre-order right now. And I saw it's on 33% discount. So order up, buy two. That way you can keep one on the shelf.
Christmas gifts are coming
increase
up.
Increase
the beer, so why not
value? Just get all the secondary value.
That first edition.
You know, once you open your book, it decreases in value.
So buy two.
So you need a second one to put on the shelf and display.
Right. So you can flip it.
And maybe flip it later.
Yeah, there you go. Absolutely. So, guys, thanks again. You know, This is a fun weekend, fun experience. Hopefully next year we can make 2 days out of it. Who knows?
I don't know if we can handle 2 days.
Yeah. About a three, well, that's a better percentage.
Next year, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, let's see if Fred invites us again. So, so let's say thanks to Fred.
Thanks, Fred.
I got blackballed after Friday night.
All right. Well, cheers, everyone. And make sure you follow Bourbon Pursuit on all those great places, as well as these guys. And we'll see everybody next week.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, cheers. Watching.